Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, welcome to The Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, the rights holders for television in the UK. Catherine Whittaker representing Eurosport, and how about this, Catherine Whittaker? We a backstage at Eurosport right now. Look at this. Mats Wilander's over there. Look, there he is. Can you see him?
I've smuggled you in, David. I've smuggled you into the Eurosport green room. Yeah, Mats Wilander's opposite us. Henri Leconte's over there. The great and the good of Eurosport. They're all here.
I know, absolutely. And what a day we have had here at the tennis today. Day 5 of the Australian Open. Where do we start? Where on earth do we start? Andy Murray just breezed through to the next round, didn't he? You remember that? About 4 hours ago? 6 hours ago? Something like that? And but more important things happened than that. Tell us about it.
I suspect from a Solly Hull point of view, what you're referring to is a certain Mr. Dan Evans, who was utterly mesmerising today. When he plays the sort of tennis he plays today, there is nobody, brackets, apart from Roger Federer, who we'll come on to later, that is better to watch on a tennis court.
Really? In the whole world?
I don't know, maybe Gael Monfils. I mean, that is the most watchable tennis. Federer aside, and as I say, we'll talk about that in great detail later, but who doesn't want to watch that, the kind of tennis that Dan Evans plays? The way he plays the big points, the way he plays break points and set points and match points is, I mean, any tennis player could learn from that. I mean, okay, I asked him about it after the match, and about how aggressive and gutsy and how can you be most brave when there's most on the line? And he said, I can't do it any other way. I would lose if I did it any other way. It's all I know. It's all I can do. I have to do it that way. Which I think is perhaps not giving himself enough credit. Because, yeah, that was the most watchable tennis. He's so watchable. You know, Mark Petchy said his serve was Federer-like in commentary. Because of the way he bends his back. And what's not to like about watching somebody, what is he, 5'7", 5'8"?
He's at least 5'9", Catherine. How are you doing with the service?
Crikey. Well, yeah, 5'9". I mean, he's still giving nearly a foot away to some of these guys. Watching him intimidate them with his aggressiveness, with his positivity and bravery is amazing.
Bernard Tomic said he played well tonight. In his press conference, he said, look, I'm quite happy with my performance today. He lost in straight sets. I mean, that's how well Dan Evans played. He's through to the last 16 of the Australian Open for the first time in his career. We'll be hearing from Dan Evans very shortly. We'll be hearing from Leon Smith, the Great Britain Davis Cup captain, here on the Tennis Podcast. We'll also, later on in the show, we're going to hear from Carlos Moya. Can't believe it. We've only got a one-on-one with Carlos Moya, 10 minutes with him, talking all about Rafael Nadal. That is coming up. But Evans, just to talk about the actual match, I mean, he was keyed up, psyched up from the very first ball. I mean, and I think this is a problem for Tomic. I think if he's going to make any further strides in his career, he's going to have to find a way to go with the intensity of an opponent, because they play very similarly. Yet there was one fella who looked like he had been chained up eating raw meat all day, and frankly Bernard Tomic looked like he'd been sitting in a hammock.
Yeah, well, I sprinted over to the High Sense Arena, which is a fair distance away from the rest of the complex here at Melbourne Park, at about, I think it was at 4 all in the what turned out to be the last set, the third set, because I was doing the flash interview, the on-court interview with Dan Evans, and I walked into the media centre at High Sense Arena. There's sort of a mini media centre over there, the main one's obviously at Rod Laver Arena, and I sat down. The on-court announcer was there, an Aussie guy, and a media person, a couple of other people, and one of them said, and they were all Aussie, and they were all cheering for Dan Evans, and I said, "Did you guys, you know, are you secret Solihull residents or something?"
There's a bit of Solihull in everyone, I think.
And one of them said, and I think he spoke for all of them, he said, "Well, one guy on this court's got heart and the other one doesn't. Or if he does, he's certainly not showing it."
Oh, that's cutting, isn't it? Yeah. But, you know, actually, in commentary, we were commentating on it at Five Live Sports Extra, and I did feel as though the crowd was struggling to come to terms with Tommy, because you can see that there's just a disconnect between the crowd and Bernard Tomic. It doesn't really work. It doesn't mesh. Evans is a much more Australian type character.
Absolutely. He's a terrier, isn't he? And I don't think it helps when his box screaming at Dan, give him hell. You know, I asked him about it in... I think that was Mats Wilander chanting the name of Dan Evans. Is that what that was?
Where was that?
Perhaps not.
You love Dan Evans. I think we better just get your opinion very quickly, Mats Wilander, on Dan Evans, because you know, it's not every day we get to speak to royalty like Mats Wilander. What is your view of Dan Evans?
I think Dan Evans is such a breath of fresh air when he plays tennis, because he's really involved. He has a great-looking game. He's kind of a shortish guy compared to the big guys on tour, but he plays with a lot of power. He can serve up over 200 kilometers an hour. He's got one-handed backhand. And his story is like, there's something special, because where has he been? And suddenly comes out, and you're like, wow, this guy can really, really play. And he's got a really good attitude, and he's engaged, and he's enthusiastic, and the crowd loves him. So, he's a breath of fresh air.
He makes you care, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He really makes you care, and he wears his emotions on his sleeve. He gets the crowd involved, and he seems to be a nice guy at the end of it, and the interview was very nice about Bernard Tomic's game. So, but not overly nice, in a way. You know, he's a competitor. And, yeah, attitude, really good.
He's got the thumbs up from Mats Wilander, seven-time Grand Slam champion. How about that? Well, Dan Evans went straight into press conference afterwards. And, I mean, he gave a wonderful press conference. We'll play that for you, some of that for you right now. He talked about, obviously, the match and the situation, everything he'd been going through. He also made reference to Julian Hofferlein, a coach of his over the last couple of years, who very sadly passed away about 18 months ago. Really sad news. Somebody Dan was very close to. Dan blew a kiss to the sky after the match point today, in obvious tribute and affection towards Julian. And this is Dan Evans in his post-match press conference.
It was a goal to make the fourth round of a slam this year. It's satisfying, but I'm not looking back yet. We've got another match on Sunday, I think it is. We'll see what happens then, and then after the tournament, look back. Whatever happens, it's been a great tournament, but, you know, there's still some tennis to be played.
Was there a reason why you pointed at the sky at the end of the match?
Yeah, obviously, you guys know Jules. There's been a lot on Twitter about Jules this week, so quite a lot of people are reminding me about Jules this week, and, you know, he wrote that article at the end, which he obviously wasn't that complimentary about me, which I think he said it was an interlude into my life, tennis, so an interlude in my life, and, you know, at the time he was probably right, and yeah, I guess when you get a bit older you look back at those sort of things, and I just think it's a bit of a shame that he I'm sure he sees it from somewhere, but just not on the right side, you know.
Did you use that, the fact that you knew it wasn't just an interlude, did you kind of want to prove that somehow?
Yeah, when he passed away, it was, you know, I sort of knew Jules was going to pass away. He sent a video to us at Davis Cup in Belgium, and we wasn't allowed to go see him because he was so sick, and, like, I would never want anyone to see that video. I mean, it was it was harrowing. He knew he was going to die. He pretty much knew. So, yeah, it's you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? And just that was probably not the main thing of when I started to, you know, I was getting myself together before that, before he died. But when he died, a lot of people said, who were close to Jules, you know, I never got to see Jules again after he left the LTA, pretty much. I've seen him a few times with Maria, but once he got sick pretty quick, so his family didn't want anyone to, or the doctors didn't want anyone to see him. So I sort of just, you know, took it, you know, those things sort of hit you, and yeah, I mean, yeah, still, it's just not an easy thing, you know, when you spent some of those years. I spent pretty much every day of my life with him, pretty much day in, day out of my working life. So yeah, it's difficult, but you know, I just, you know, obviously I've got Hilts now, but it would also be good if Jaws is in the box. Yeah.
What about Kevin Peterson the other day? Dan tweeted about it.
Yeah, he didn't want me to have a picture with him. That was it. He was, I think he was worse for wear, I guess. Well, that was his excuse when he replied. But it's quite funny, isn't it, how things work out. He was my favourite cricketer until that point, genuinely was. But there was some serious rage for about 20 minutes in that, when I was after that happened. There was some serious rage. Yeah, it was a bad moment, that was. It was so embarrassing as well. He didn't even just say, like, he didn't just say no, he, like, handed me off as well, which I was nowhere near him either, so that was, oh, God. Yeah, it was really embarrassing as well.
Around the roulette table or something?
No, no, no. It was like, I would understand if he was playing a game or something. I wasn't in the casino. I was, like, coming out of a restaurant, and he was walking down the hall, and yeah, I mean, he wasn't even like getting hassled or anything. He was just with three friends. It was like no one round him. I'd get it if everyone was asking him, but yeah, it's amazing. But I heard that's not such a surprise to some people. Maybe you'd know, Mike.
I haven't seen him for a while.
Oh my God, sit on the fence, mate. Jeez.
So there's Dan Evans, Catherine. We had everything. We had emotion, we had analysis of the match, and we had the wonderful little tale about Kevin Peterson, the cricketer. So I can't wait for his ride to reply. You've had a sort of, I don't want to say a love-hate relationship with Dan Evans, but he's not the easiest interviewee on the planet, is he? Let's be honest. I mean, I find him quite good fun to interview, as long as you're not trying to get straightforward sound bites out of him. It's a bit of an effort for you sometimes to get what you need for TV and that sort of thing. But he's warming up, as you heard there. I mean, there is more to him.
Yeah, look, all the things that make him not a particularly brilliant television interviewee make me like him. They're all likeable qualities. You know, he's himself. He's not a natural in front of the camera. He's not a performing monkey. You know, he doesn't see a camera red light switch on and suddenly become this different person that's all camera friendly and everything. They make me like him as a human being. It just makes him a challenging interviewee. You know, he's obviously not 100% comfortable in front of the camera, and that's not fine. That's fine. Lots of people aren't. You know, not everybody can be Roger Federer, who's able to be 100% himself and also 100% comfortable in all situations. It's fine. It's just. It's a challenge for someone like me who's not from Solihull, who can't, you know, give him crap about being a Villa fan. I can't do that. So, yeah, to sort of...
Especially not as a Reading fan.
To soften him, exactly. Soften him up, warm him up. It take, but, you know, challenge is good. Challenge is good. And to be fair, he gave me a cracking flash interview today. You know, I threw him quite an edgy question about Bernard Tomic's dad refusing Dan Evans
as a practice partner
because he's not good enough. And Dan, in a very measured way, dealt with that. He said there's no beef with Bernie at all. He doesn't understand it all because Bernie seems absolutely fine with him, but his dad's always given him aggro, and during the match he was giving him aggro. You know, he was saying,
actually in the press conference he was keen to make out it wasn't his dad, but it was other guys in the box that were giving him a really hard time, and he wasn't too pleased with that. But you're right. Now he's got Joe Wilfred Tsonga next in the last 16 of the Australian Open. Let's find out what Leon Smith, the Great Britain Davis Cup captain, has made of it all.
It was a very, very brave performance. Look, he started the year great. Final in Sydney, a top 10 win against Dominic Thiem, and then he obviously beats Marin Cilic. Momentum's really with him. You can tell the confidence there, but he had to fight really hard today. He covered a lot of ground. He had to do a lot of running. Tomic plays really close to the baseline. But when he had to fight, he just kept doing it. But then there was also important that he played the big points really well. He went after the ball. He was aggressive with his forehand up the line. And I thought his net play today was absolutely outstanding. Not many people play. Well, we saw Federer do it tonight. We saw Dan Evans do it earlier. His net play was absolutely fantastic. You know, and also to play Tomic, you know, in his own backyard on a crowd that got a little bit more hostile as the match went on, I thought he handled it terrifically well. It's a wonderful, wonderful performance. It's a
big step for him, isn't it? Because he's been at this stage three more times before, and he's come very close to getting to the fourth round. First time he's made it.
Yeah, the matches against Robredo, US Open a few years ago, and then obviously the match against Wawrinka when he had match points last year. You know, he keeps showing that he can play with the big boys. He keeps showing that he's able. I mean, wins against Thiem and Cilic, like I say, already this year. It just shows him where he's at, and you know, he'll have a career high ranking when this is finished. And you know, it's a great start to the year. But it just rubber stamps why he's doing the hard work. Why he's doing what he's doing with his team of Mark Hilton and his trainer Ash back home, and you know, it makes it worthwhile when things start to come together. And the good thing is, he's just getting better.
How do you rate his chances against Tsonga? Jeremy Bates said he doesn't think Tsonga will particularly enjoy Dan's style of play.
Yeah, look, Joe Wilfred Tsonga is a very good tennis player with serious firepower, plays well in these courts, has a good record here, so it's going to be a difficult match. But Dan's, like I say, I'm going to say it again, he's beaten Thiem, he's beaten Cilic, he's beaten Tomic. Can he beat Tsonga? Yeah, he's going to have to play very well again. But his game style, where he can, you know, use a slice, come forwards a lot, he should try and come in on, obviously, on Tsonga's backhand quite a lot, force him into passing shots, try and hustle like he does really well, get as many first serve returns back in play as possible. But as usual, he's going to have to serve well and take care of his service games. But he's got the game, and he's got the confidence. And the one thing about Dan is that it doesn't matter who he goes on court with, he does believe he's got a shot of winning, and that's really important.
I think Leon Smith thinks Dan Evans has got a chance.
Oh, he's in the last 16 of a slam. He has more than a chance. He's the heavy underdog, but he has a significant chance.
He has a chance.
I mean, how could he not have a chance in that match?
I'll tell you what, Tsonga looked good today, by the way. He beat Jack Sock, and, you know, favourite tweet of the day, unquestionably, we've all just been looking at it, by Mike Dixon of the Daily Mail, which was that Solly Hall has more representatives in the men's last 16 than the United States of America, which I thought was magnificent. Sorry to all of our listeners from the United States, but I am from Solihull. It is my podcast with Catherine, and, you know, I get to tease you all. So Jack Sock, who a lot has been spoken about, and he's been playing really well. He won Auckland, but Tsonga was really good today. So that's one of the results that we've had today. But kind of in terms of just sheer performance levels, the one that we're all talking about, the reason we're all having a beer now, is because we've just watched Roger Federer do what I think some of us fear in a way that he wouldn't have been able to do again. You know? Really? I mean, I'm not too sure that there are too many people at this tournament that thought tonight and his 6-2, 6-4, 6-4 demolition of Thomas Burdick was possible at the age of 35, particularly after the first two rounds.
It was utterly heartwarming and uplifting. I mean, I genuinely think some of this spontaneous merriment that we're experiencing in this green room at the moment is genuinely down to how good everybody feels watching Federer play like that and knowing we have to make the most of it while we can. I mean, it's almost now, whatever happens, we've enjoyed another.
We've always got tonight.
Exactly. It's exactly that. I mean, it wasn't as good a performance as in the semi-final of Wimbledon against Andy Murray a couple of years ago. But in context, it was exactly like that. It was a take your breath away, my goodness me, let's just stand back and enjoy Roger Federer in our sport.
Maybe. Yeah, because, I mean, he made a world-class player in Thomas Burdick look ordinary. Thomas Burdick is not ordinary, and that's what he was made to look out there today.
Well, I spoke to Goran Ivanišević this morning. He'd just come off the practice court with Thomas Burdick, and I was a bit nervous about it because Goran, as good of a relationship as I have with him, there's two Gorans, isn't there? Famously.
Three, arguably.
Three, yeah, famously. You just don't know what you're going to get. And he was delightful as anything, completely up for being interviewed, so relaxed about it all. And on the question of, you know, what have you made of Federer's two matches so far in this tournament, his answer was, I'm not impressed by Federer.
Yes, magnificent Goran. Well, not to worry, eh? Nearly worked out. Better luck next time. But
there was more to it than that. He went on to say, but he's still Roger Federer, and he can still pull it. You know, there was mitigation.
The
I don't want to make him look a fool.
Jim Courier said, I mean, and Jim Courier reads tennis players just about as well as anybody. He was concerned for Federer tonight before the match, and he actually said, you know, I think I see even a little bit of fear or a little bit of trepidation in the eyes of Federer as he went out onto the court. I mean, you know, we've all said stuff like that, but it was extraordinary to watch. The moment that you realise he hit a couple out the middle and you're thinking, crikey, he's on it tonight. And The one that came back to me, actually, as a comparison performance was 2009 against Juan Martín Del Potro in the Australian Open semi-finals. And he said the day before he'd found out that his wife was going to have twins. And he said it gave him wings. And I think he beat Del Potro 6-3, 6-love, 6-love. You know, I mean, later that year he lost the US Open final to him. But he had that feel tonight, that otherworldly feel about his performance. And it was a joy to behold.
Yeah, I mean,
but he's got Kei Nishikori now. Kei Nishikori's in form. He just won in straight sets.
Yeah, that will be a different prospect. I think he'll need to play as well as that to have a good chance against Kei Nishikori. I'm still predicting he'll win it because we're all riding the
swooning
the Federer joy wave to the extent that we're probably unable to be completely objective. But it's interesting that the conditions, I was talking to my brother yesterday about the conditions, these new balls this year. I don't want to harp on about it, but I think it is more of a significant factor than people like us who like to talk about, you know, the stories and everything, the big narratives. You know, it's all very technical to talk about balls and court speeds and everything. I do think it's a big factor at this tournament this year. And I was talking to my brother about it, who probably is a better technical analyst of the game than I am, and he said he thinks this might be a surprise winner year. He said, you know, these sorts of conditions, the fact that, you know, the likes of Andy Murray are finding them very difficult to deal with, it favours a sort of compact, high percentage player like Kei Nishikori, perhaps. But obviously Federer is going to win it, so it's all fine.
Yeah, he's a bit of a Federer fan. A slight understatement. So that is what we've had today on the men's side. We've also had, I'll tell you what, unfortunately, she doesn't get the same degree of mention in this conversation. I think a lot of it is because we were certainly on Five Live so wrapped up in the Dan Evans match that I was only able to kind of watch Venus Williams out of the corner of my eye. But she, at the age of 36, won, I think, 6-love, 6-1. I mean, she was awesome, and she has been for a couple of rounds now.
6-love, 6-1. It was 6-love, 6-1. It was amazing. At one point, it was looking like 6-love, 6-love. I love that here they pay her the respect she deserves. She never gets put anywhere other than Margaret Court or Rod Laver Arena. They don't even do that in New York. At Wimbledon, I think they are borderline disrespectful with their treatment of her. I mean, I understand all the considerations, and I understand that she's not been a Grand Slam champion for a number of years and all of that, but she deserves always, I think, to be on one of the two, possibly three main courts, but we shouldn't ever be seeing her on an outside court, I don't think.
No, I couldn't agree more, and it's a major beef of mine, actually, that one. What else we had? I mean, early on in the day, there were some incredibly competitive matches. Eugenie Bouchard and Coco Vandeweghe were knocking lumps out of each other, and eventually Vandeweghe turned around a break deficit in the final set to win through. We also had one of the longest matches this tournament's ever seen in the women's draw, 3 hours and 36 minutes, I think, for Svetlana Kuznetsova to beat Yelena Yankovic, and there was also Pavlyuchenko who beat Svitolina. Lots going on.
I think Svetlana Kuznetsova might have been involved in every single one of the longest matches of all time at every tournament. All the longest matches records, tournament-specific, you know, all-time records, I think her name might be included in all of them.
A bit greedy, really.
Yeah, she loves a battle, doesn't she?
She is a fighter.
Yeah, God, she's great. I mean, I think she holds the record for all-time longest Australian Open match and Grand Slam match for a match with Schiavone a few years ago, and it had echoes of that. You know, Yankovic was leading by a break in that deciding set, and I don't think there was anybody that thought that Kuznetsova wasn't going to break back and at least take it to 9-7. I think I was saying it was going to be 10-8, and I was annoyed it was 9-7.
Oh, well, not to worry.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's going to happen tomorrow? Have we got an order of play for tomorrow? Because it is all going to happen once again on day six, which is going to be... Is it the start of the last 16 tomorrow? I can't remember, is it? No, it's not. It's the rest of the third round matches, isn't it? Because Andy Murray's, of course, in the top half of the draw. And then we've got Dan Evans in that half of the draw and Roger Federer. So Federer and Murray now are just one match away from meeting, aren't they?
I've sort of got photographic memory going on for the order of play. Well, I know Joe Conte against Caroline Wozniacki is third up on the Margaret Court Arena. We've got Monfils and Kohlschreiber on that court as well. On Rod Laver, the men's evening match is Gasquet and Dimitrov, which I find very interesting because every time I look at that matchup, I think, oh, what a corker, that's got five sets or three sets if it's a tour match written all over it. And then I check their head-to-head and I realise Gasquet just has an incredible record against Dimitrov, and I think, what? Why is that? So,
is it going to change?
Put me on the spot, maybe.
Yes, it is. I say.
Well, it's fine. You've gotten off the fence for me. Thanks.
There we go. Yeah, absolutely.
Nadal Zverev is the one. Can I backtrack on my prediction?
What have you got?
Well, before the tournament, I had Zverev.
No, you can't backtrack.
What I think now will happen is that Nadal will be pushed and will win. I've been very impressed with Nadal.
I've been saying Nadal all along, see? I mean, some of us just come on record at the outset.
There's Sibulkova, Makarova, which I like the look of, winner to play the winner of Konta and Wozniacki, and the Serena Williams against Nicole Gibbs, and I think we all have strong suspicions about how that will go.
Probably, yes. I can't wait. It's all coming up tomorrow. Subject of Nadal. How about this? I got to spend 10 minutes in the company of former world number one Carlos Moya, who at the end of last year joined the coaching team of Rafael Nadal. And I asked Carlos how it all came about.
Well, I got a phone call from Tony when I was at the IPTL playing, and he knew that I was not going to be in Ranić's team anymore, so he asked me if I wanted to join their team and also to work for the academy that they just opened half year ago. So yeah, after that I wanted to speak to Rafa to see how he's feeling, what his goals are, and then I decided to join them.
And what were his goals?
Well, I wanted to see how eager he is to be back at the top, where I think he still belongs. And for some reasons, he was not able to compete at 100% for the last couple of years. So, he told me that he's working very hard and that he really wants to be back there. So, also for me, it's an honor to be in his team. We know each other for a long time, and I decided to join him.
It's something that I noticed from his pre-tournament press conference. One of the last answers he said was, look, if I didn't want to do what I've been doing for the last 10 years and compete at that level, I'd go and play golf or be fishing. You know, that was a pretty clear statement of how much he wants it. And I imagine, as you say, when you are going to invest your time, you need to know that it's going to be worthwhile, and you obviously got the right answers.
Yeah, of course, because I have three kids back home, so it's not easy for me to travel. So, that's what made me join them. I saw, what he said at the press conference is what he told me. He proved me that he's right. He's been practicing very hard. He's been taking care of his body. He's healthy. He's taking care of everything. He's doing whatever is in his hand to try to become to be back at the top. I'm here to help. We are a good team with Tony and Francis and the rest of the team. So hopefully we're going to help him.
You obviously, you've known him since he was a young boy, and you played him, I remember, early on in very early on in his career. You've been friends with him for many, many years, and you'll have seen when you were coaching Milos last year, you'll have watched his matches, seen I guess his struggles. What were your senses of what you saw? What has he been struggling with over the last couple of years?
Well, I watched not all his matches because obviously he was one of Milos' opponent. But I saw that because of the injuries, he was not able to perform at his best. Once he was playing well, after he won Barcelona and Monte Carlo, he got injured and he was playing really well. So he was very unlucky to miss Roland Garros and then also to miss Wimbledon and Toronto. He was back for the Olympics, but I don't think he was quite ready for it. And then still had the problem with the wrist by the end of the year. So that's why he didn't play the indoor season. He wanted to get ready for it, so for this year. So it was about being injured. So one of the keys for this year, I would say, he needs to be healthy in order to be able to be back at his level. And so far, he's taking care of his body. He's doing, like I said before, whatever is in his hands to try to be healthy and to be 100%.
Yeah, I asked him in the press conference, are you pain-free, Rafa? He said, look, I haven't got any injuries, but pain-free was a long time ago. Yeah. Obviously, he's a bit older now. But where do you think, you obviously saw him when he was at the absolute peak of his powers. How far away is he from that now? If he's healthy, is he still that good?
Yeah, of course, he's not that far away. You have to see how are the other guys doing, like Murray number one at 29, Djokovic is 29. They are just 1 year younger than him. They're young players. They are, I don't think they are ready yet to be one of the top five in the world. So maybe in a couple of years. So he has time. He's not 20 years old anymore, but he still has it on him, and I'm sure if he's healthy, like we've been talking before, he's not that far. Now he needs matches. He needs to win a few matches to get his confidence back. He's halfway to do that. Practicing, he's playing very well, but now you need this extra 10-20% that only matches can give you. So yeah, we need to win a couple of matches, and I think he'll be very close to his peak.
And what do you think so far, and looking forward, you are going to be able to bring? Is there something you've already identified that I'd like to see you do this Rafa or that Rafa?
Yeah, we're working on a few different things. Obviously you cannot change a lot, a guy that has won 14 Grand Slams and he's 30 years old, but there is always room for evolution, and that's what we think as a team, what that he needs to keep evolving, to being more aggressive, to try to put more pressure with his serve, and once he is dictating, try to finish a point or at the net or being aggressive with the forehand. So we're trying to do that. We're working very hard on that, but like I said, now you need matches to give this 10-20% of confidence that he's lacking still.
I heard Andy Murray say a couple of days ago that now he's world number one, he likes having Ivan Lendl with him because he has somebody who's been number one to talk about how to stay number one. And obviously there's only a few people in the world that's ever experienced that. You've been number one, you've been a Grand Slam champion. Do you think that that's part of the appeal to Rafa, to have you with him?
Well, I think it's a bit different with Rafa. Rafa has been number one for, I don't know, 3-4 years. He's won 14 slams, so I wouldn't say it's the same case. It's like with Milos also was different. He was on his way up, still improving, and didn't reach his top. So it's different with Rafa. Obviously, he's 30 years old. Like I said, he's won all the slams that he's won in the past. So probably he needs someone new, which is not unknown for him. We are very close since 20 years, so he knows that I want the best for him. That's very important for Rafa. Rafa needs to have people that he really trusts, and that's how he performs his best. He's been with Tony, with Francis, with Maimo for so many years, so he needs someone that is going to be close to him. But my case is different with Nadal. It's different than Andy's case, for sure.
We've had a huge shock at this tournament with Novak Djokovic, who's won it 6 times, going out at the second round stage. Obviously, you know, that would only become relevant to Rafa if he were to reach the semi-finals, because that was his projected opponent if he'd have got further along in the tournament. But what does that... How big a shock is that to you to see Novak lose that early?
Well, it's shocking, obviously, to see that Novak lost second round. And we want to go match by match, obviously. That's for sure going to put some extra pressure on all the players from the bottom half. But you have to try to forget that, try to play your next match, not the 3 matches ahead of you. So we're going to be just focusing on that. But obviously, it's a big shock to see that Novak lost to Istomin.
Just a final point. You know, when you were at the top of the game, and obviously you're there to be shot at in a way, everybody's hunting you. Novak has been dominant for so long, and then the last 6 months he hasn't been at the same level. I mean, what is it like trying, once you're defending a title like you were with the French Open, or you're defending your world number one ranking, is it a little bit more stressful in a way?
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of stress, and these guys that they're used to win every week and always on the top of the rankings, so everybody trying to chase them, and that's not easy. That puts some extra pressure, and as soon as their level drops 0.1%, you can feel it, and all the other players trying to improve, trying to see how you play, and trying to find your weaknesses. So it's not easy. Still, it's great what Novak has been doing for the last few years. He's been dominating the game in an unbelievable way. So I wouldn't say he's done at all. For sure he will be back stronger than ever in the next few months. He's going to work hard on his tennis, and I'm sure he still has a few slams in him.
Lovely to talk to you, Carlos.
All right.
Best of luck.
Thank you.
So Carlos Moya and Rafa Nadal, Catherine, what do we think? Is that going to be a difference maker for Nadal? Is that going to bring him back to his greatness? Is he going to win big and get to a Grand Slam final again under Carlos Moya? Based on what we've heard there. I mean, you know, he sounded pretty convincing to me. He's really put thought into that, rather than just sort of saying, oh, well, of course I'll do what Nadal wants because he's Nadal. He wanted to know, are you really going to sacrifice and be up for doing what it takes?
I'm already quite convinced. Look, I think it's already a successful partnership. I already see something in Nadal that I wasn't seeing last year. I think we discussed it at the time of the appointment. Just the fact of somebody else being in that team, which there never really has been before, just the fact of a different voice, almost no matter what that voice is saying, the fact that that voice is Carlos Moyer is a whole dimension, all different dimension altogether. But the fact of a different voice, I think, is really significant in itself. So yeah, I think it's already a great appointment. I do see something in Nadal's eye that I haven't seen for a little while, and I think there's a bit more penetration on the ground strokes. I think there's a bit more depth on the ground strokes. I think he will be tested tomorrow. I do still stand by that. I was talking about it with Gigi Salmon, your colleague earlier, and Gigi said it doesn't matter how much he's tested, Zverev will be thinking about that missed volley at Indian Wells on match point. I don't know about that, actually. I think I disagree. I think Zverev has so much confidence and cockiness to burn. I'm not sure that match point will even occur to him. I mean, that guy is, in his mind, and to be fair, in the minds of most pundits, I think, a world number one in waiting. But crucially, in his mind, he is.
Yeah, that's pretty important, isn't it? Hey, it's all coming up tomorrow. We will be back with another edition of the Tennis Podcast brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Go and read Simon Briggs' articles. He'll have been writing all about Dan Evans. I got him in touch with Dan Evans' uncle today. So that'll be something you can read about in The Telegraph, I'm quite sure. You'll be able to read about Federer's majestic performance as well. Eurosport's coverage will be back tomorrow. Don't forget, there's a special offer, $19.99, for UK viewers to get hold of the Eurosport Player. 12 months of access to see all the Grand Slams, all that sort of stuff, and loads of other tennis tournaments as well. So do go and have a look at that if you're interested. We'll be back with coverage tomorrow. All the tennis, all going to be there. And we'll speak to you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.